It's time for Rebel Extra, brought to you by Battle Born Injury Lawyers.
Bounces to Clyburn. He feeds it. Bucket for the slam dunk.
Live from Office Bar and Naked City Pizza on Paradise Road.
Ball right side, Clyburn. Chris Clyburn takes a three and knocks it down.
Here's your hosts, Tyler Bischoff and Kevin E. Martin.
Rebel Extra post-game show. UNLV falls for the second time this year, 72-64 to Valparaiso. And much like their first loss to Loyola Marymount, it was an ugly offensive game for UNLV. They had 24 turnovers against Loyola Marymount. They had 25 tonight, so able to top that. So it's not good when you almost have as many turnovers as made shots. They made 27 shots tonight. That's not an ideal ratio there.
No.
Kevin E. Martin here with me. What's the takeaway from that game offensively besides it was just terrible?
Yeah, I'm still trying to digest what I just saw. It was tough to watch, to be honest. The offense was stagnant. They couldn't get in a flow. There were a couple possessions where it looked like they were getting something going, a pick and pop with Noah and Juice. But then they would have consecutive offensive possessions with turnovers, and it was an easy transition bucket for Valpo. You can't win games with 25 turnovers, plain and simple.
The turnovers is the biggest concern from this game, and you've seen now UNLV play six games, and the two that they've lost, the turnovers has been the story. It's been the big problem for them. If you look at the turnovers in this game, to me there were two big areas. One was Amori Hardy driving the ball. He was sloppy tonight, and that's the downside of Amori Hardy putting the ball in his hands. Last four games, he's been really good.
Mm-hmm.
But tonight, a lot of turnovers from Amori Hardy. And then the other one was, the other aspect of the game was Valpo was swarming the post, and UNLV kept trying to make post-to-post bounce passes,
mm-hmm.
and every single one of them
got
either deflected or stolen, like every single time. And if you're going to have teams, and it's probably going to happen to UNLV because they play big and they like to play through the post, if you're going to have teams that try to clamp down on the post, you have to be able to get the ball out of the post to the perimeter, and they just – They did that a little bit tonight, but not enough, and they kept trying to make those bounce passes from Justin to Dembele or Justin to Jong or whatever it was, and they just kept resulting in turnovers. And if you're UNLV looking at it big picture offensively, this is kind of the floor for you. Like, this is as
mm-hmm.
bad as it gets.
Exactly.
The question is, how often do we see this? Because
right.
we've seen it twice now in six
mm-hmm.
games. If it happens twice every six games, that's not a good ratio
no.
for the season.
Especially with an opponent like Cincinnati on the other side of this. But I think you hit the nail on the head when you said sloppy. I mean, these turnovers, obviously when you're a transition team, you're going to have turnovers. Like, those are expected. When you're a running team or running gun team, those are expected. But 25, the number is alarming. And then on top of that, like you said, they were just sloppy. They're in their half court set, lazy passes, travels. I mean, it was some of them, I noticed, they were trying to overshare. I don't know if you noticed that. They were making too many passes, and it was just like, at that point, it's just like, shoot the ball. And then you also mentioned getting the ball into the post and kicking it back out. But when you're shooting 17% from three-point range, I mean, at that point, it's just like a lose-lose. But
no, they were only 1 of 8, like, 30 minutes into the game.
True.
So most of those misses came at the end when they were
exactly.
trying to jack
that's
it
true.
Up.
Exactly, that's
but
true.
But they don't have a lot of good shooters.
Right.
Like, it's a team that sort of lacks that shooting aspect, and it's probably going to be an issue all season long. Because early in the game, before the turnovers really started to mount, UNLV threw the ball to Mbaki Jiang, and Valpo immediately doubled off of Joel mm-hmm. Tombwe. And Tombwe, starting at your small forward spot, he's a perimeter player. He's not much of a three-point threat. He'll take a couple, and he knocked down the first one of the game tonight. But those are the types of guys that you are – defenses, they'll leave him. They'll leave him on the perimeter because if he beats you from three, then that's what defenses will –
exactly.
they'll take that. The other part of the turnovers that was concerning, you mentioned the travels. There were six total called in the first half on both teams, which is a high number because it's you know, just keep dribbling the ball.
Right.
Don't stop dribbling
yeah.
the ball. But the other thing was the moving screens. And
mm-hmm.
Mbaki Jiang actually fouls out of the game at around the four-minute mark on a moving screen. And it's something that's been more of an emphasis in college basketball, that you have to set a legitimate screen with your feet inside your shoulders. You can't stick your hip out, stick your knee out, stick your foot out or anything. And UNLV looked like they were completely unaware that that was something that college basketball is referees are calling more of this year, because they kept getting called for it. Tervell Beck got called for a few of those as well. Like, it just kept happening. They're big men almost every time they tried to set a ball screen.
But also, when you hear Valpo, I mean, a lot of times, this was a good team. This was a very good team. Obviously, they were picked seventh in the preseason Missouri Valley Conference, but they took Wake Forest down to the wire, West Virginia down to the wire. I mean, both of those games were single-digit losses. So, yes, this is a bad loss, but this was a good opponent. So, I mean, when you hear Valpo, you don't exactly think that, you know, that that top-tier opponent, but this was a good team that they lost to tonight.
It's a bad loss in the way they played the game. It's not necessarily a terrible loss, like, how could you lose to Valpo type of loss. But the way they played tonight makes you think, oh, that's going to be really bad going forward. The shooting in this game was strange for UNLV, because in the first half, they shot 60%.
Yeah.
Like, they turned the ball over a ton in the first half. It was still a problem, but it was okay, because when they didn't turn it over, they basically made everything they threw up. They started the second half. It was 2 of 13, and they end up going 12 of 41 in the second half. That's 29% in the second half. Like, they could not hit a shot, and as you said about the threes, they were 2 of 14 in the second half from three. Like, they could not hit anything in this game. You even had they're trying to make a comeback late. Shakur Justin gets a couple of drives to the basket and just misses from 5 feet away. Amori Hardy had one and just missed from 5 feet away. Like, they just had a tough time scoring tonight.
They did, and it's I guess that's one positive you can take out of this game. The fight that this team showed down the stretch was one of the things that I was impressed with. I mean, there was a point where just mass exodus out of Thomas and Mack. And if I'm a player on the court and I'm seeing that, I mean, it's tough not to just, you know, not give up, but, you know, feel deflated. But these guys, I mean, they were just missing easy layups. Like, Shaq or Juice, I can't remember.
Whichever nickname you want, Kevin, you can go Shaq or Juice.
He had a couple of incredible, tough drives to the basket, but just ended up missing them. And then I remember the one that he missed, he got his own offensive rebound and missed a second. They were still fighting down the stretch. They were diving for loose balls. So if that's one positive that comes out of this, is the fight in this team. I mean, they didn't give up down the stretch.
We'll take your call, 702-364-1100, 702-364-1100 here on Rebel Extra, the post-game show. Call in. Let us know what you think. On that layup note, as a team, they were 15 of 29 on layups, just barely over 50% on layups. Like, you need to be, like, at 80%.
That's unacceptable.
Or so. So 15 of 29 is just – it's a brutal number to have.
Yeah, that's unacceptable.
You throw that on top of 25 turnovers, and you just don't have a chance. Right. I believe we have Keith on the phone. Was that the name I heard correctly? Keith. Jake. Okay. I can't hear at all. Jake, what do you have to say about the Rebels tonight?
What I got to say about the Rebels, I don't think that team was better than our team player-wise. I've just come to the fact that I really think that we're starting to get out-coached, and it's really starting to show. That's just my two cents about what's going on.
Well, we appreciate that, Jake. So, on that aspect, I don't really think Valpo has better players than UNLV tonight. On the coaching part of it, the offense was ugly. I think you could probably have gotten a little bit more out of the coaching. But I think if you look at those turnovers, I don't know if there's a whole lot Marvin Menzies could have done about most of the turnovers. And that was the core issue
of tonight. I mean, if you cut those turnovers in half, I mean, it's an entirely different ballgame.
I mean, Marvin Menzies was searching in this game as far as his lineups. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was looking for anything offensively in the second half. Turned to Trey Woodbury for a few minutes and didn't get a whole lot out of him. He was looking offensively. It's not really small for college basketball standards, but for Marvin Menzies, who loves to play two true post players, he went really small in this game where he put three legitimate guards out there. One time we had Noah Robotham, Trey Woodbury, and Bryce Hamilton all on the floor together. You had Tervell Beck and Shakur Justin playing the four and the five together. Like, he went small trying to find offense, and it didn't matter what lineup he put out there. They were still turning it over, and in the second half, they were still missing every shot that they put up there.
Right, and we still haven't touched on Derek Smith yet. I mean, Rick Smith's son, he looked like an all-star out there tonight. I mean,
he was terrific in this game.
Yeah,
and
solid.
I think we'll get to that more in depth in a minute, but one thing I really enjoyed was UNLV's student section chanting Daddy Shadow. which is a good chant, except for when he's going off.
Exactly. I was thinking the same thing.
Like, it would have been fine if he was just having an average night and put up like 8 points. But no, he had
20
in the game on 8 of 16 shooting. So, yeah, the Rebellion was trying to get at Rick Smith's son there, but I don't think it worked very well. So, Rebel Extra out here at Naked City Pizza and the Office Bar. We'll take a break here as UNLV falls to Valpo 72-64, but we will take your calls on the way back. 702-364-1100, 702-364-1100. Welcome back to the Rebel Extra postgame show here on ESPN Las Vegas. UNLV suffers their second defeat of the year to Valpo, 72-64, your final score. Tyler Bischoff, Kevin E. Martin out here. Give us your call, 702-364-1100, 702-364-1100. So we'll probably end up back talking about the offense again because I think that is the big reason why UNLV lost this game. But you bring up Derek Smith's, Rick Smith's son. Led the team in scoring, led Valpo in scoring with 20, led the game with 20, had 12 rebounds as well. The defense for UNLV wasn't particularly bad in this game, but there were a couple of things that Valpo did that I think are concerning going forward because they're what teams, it's what teams did to UNLV last season where early on, Valpo went right at him back in jump. Like, they were said, all right, Derek Smith, you're going to – they ran some pick and rolls, and they said, you're rolling to the basket. Jong's got to recover. He recovered and made a couple nice blocks. And then they were like, all right, here's a post ISO against Mbaki Jong. And Mbaki Jong's supposed to be UNLV's, you know, best defensive player. Best is the backbone of the team. If teams are going to target him and isolate him and win against him, that's going to be a major problem for UNLV in the future.
Right. Yeah, you mentioned that. And there were a couple times I noticed that just – like, Valpo was running some basic sets, and just the defensive rotation was just slow. Like, there were a couple sets where there was no help or no help to help or whatsoever. And it was, like, basic rotations that kind of, you know, was alarming to me as well.
So the formula for beating UNLV last year was to take advantage of Brandon McCoy defensively. And the way teams did that was they would put four guys around the perimeter, and then they'd run a ball screen or something and make Brandon McCoy defend that or just make him defend one-on-one and make the other guys decide, do I leave this shooter open for three or do I go help Brandon McCoy? And we saw some of that from Valpo because they just spread the floor and make sure there's nobody in the paint for whenever we get the ball in there. And Valpo's interesting on that because they're not a very good shooting team.
No.
Like, they don't have a bunch of shooters. Right. They don't even shoot a lot of threes this year. They still spread the floor and still UNLV respected that probably more than they should have.
Right.
They probably should have left those shooters or non-shooters a little bit more often. But that, to me, that was the problem last year defensively. This year's team has been better defensively. But when UNLV starts playing teams that shoot more threes, and when they get them, the Mountain West loves threes. It's a conference that has turned into a three-point shooting league. When they get into conference play, if teams start doing that again, it's probably going to be a little bit better than last year defensively, but there's a chance that UNLV just, again, defensively has no answer for it.
Because like you said, I mean, the guard play, they have to make that decision. Do they go down and help Jong, or are they going to stay true to their man and stay home? And like you said, they didn't get lucky tonight, obviously, that Valpo wasn't a good shooting team. But Derek Smith was just on. I mean, he just looked so solid down there. They had no answer for him whatsoever.
Yeah, there will be games where whoever the center is not going to be as good as Derek Smith's was tonight. There'll be games where somebody might be better than Derek Smith than Mbaki Jung. But I think it kind of comes back to Mbaki Jung because if he is, and it's probably unfair to put this on him, but if he's able to just shut down Derek Smith's, like if those first few possessions, Derek Smith's can't get anywhere, can't get off a good shot. Valpo's got to change his offensive game and UNLV is feeling much better. But because he had some success early, and all of a sudden that's what Valpo wants to go to. And then UNLV's afraid to give up the open threes because that's something that torched him last season.
Exactly.
So, again, defense wasn't the problem tonight, but I think there's some things there that you look at and you say, okay, this could be a little bit concerning going forward. You also have defensively the rotations that Marvin Menzies uses. And when they have games like this, he uses everything he possibly can. He subs a bunch. Marvin Menzies, it's – on a game-to-game basis, his substitutions are very logical in that when a lineup goes out there and plays well for 2 minutes, he's not making a substitution until he has to. When you have games like tonight, when UNLV in the second half just doesn't go on a run the whole time, he is subbing like every 30 seconds.
Oh, he was throwing, like you said, there were some guys out there, the group of five, that I've never seen before playing together. He was, like you said, he was trying everything to get something going.
And that, when you look at the defensive side of things, it hurts that side of the ball because their starting lineup is probably their best defensive starting lineup when they go with Noah Robotham, Chris Kleiber, and Joel Tomboy on the perimeter. You have a lot of length out there, and then you go with Justin and Chung on the inside. Like, that is a very long defensive lineup that can create a lot of turnovers, create a lot of havoc. It's not necessarily the best offensive lineup, but that's the best defensive lineup, or one of them. When you start playing Robotham, Hardy, and Woodbury on the perimeter, or Hamilton, Robotham, and Hardy, that's when you start to lose some of that length, and you lose some of that defensive intensity that, you know, a Joel Tomboy brings or whatever it is. And when the offense is this bad, you have to make that sacrifice, but it ends up hurting you on the other end.
No, that's a great point. Not only long, but really athletic. And when they can create that havoc and get out in transition, I mean, that's the UNLV, that's the Running Rebels that they, you know, excel at. But we haven't seen much of that, especially tonight.
They've played a lot of teams that have been able to slow UNLV down. And UNLV, I should say, has slowed games down with their defense as well. Like, their defensive possessions have been long. They've done a good job slowing teams down. But they haven't really – this was 78 possessions was how many they had tonight, and that's the most they've had all year. And it's a team that wants to play in transition. They just really haven't gotten that chance very much. But we have Ryan on the phone. Ryan, how you feeling after UNLV loses to Valpo?
They look like they were stuck in mud.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
If you had to write an article tomorrow, Tyler – and you watched UNLV basketball for the last couple of years, and you had to write what UNLV does good. What would you start with? What does Marvin Menzies' teams do well? What can you comment on that?
They do a good job in the post. They do a good job getting the ball into the paint and scoring that way. They didn't tonight. Valpo did a good job of taking that away. But I think that's sort of the hallmark of Marvin Menzies' teams now. If you were to ask me if that's going to be good enough to win, you know, 9 Mountain West games, 10 Mountain West games, I don't know that it would be.
There's, what, 353 Division I college basketball teams?
Yep.
UNLV still plays two bigs and looks to go high-low. There might be 5 teams that do that. They play 1978 basketball.
Yep.
We realize that, right?
Yep.
And they don't shoot the three-pointer. It's 2019 in a month.
Yep, we appreciate the call, and you are preaching to the choir with that one, because I am all about the 3-point shooting. I am all about getting as many. We talk about UNLV's problems on defense. It's they're going to spread the floor,
right?
And you
got
to figure out, hey, do we help off the 3-point shooter? Do we help in the paint? And it's something that UNLV just they don't do. Like,
right.
they don't try that. They would rather have two guys on the block or try the high low offense. And you play Joel Tomboy at the small forward spot, and he's not a shooter, and you can help off of him, no problem. So it's philosophically, I completely agree. I don't think this is the most efficient or the best way to play basketball.
No, and then, I mean, it's like you said, it slows them down. And when they get out, and defensively, I totally agree. I'm right there with you. I think that, like he said, he hit the nail on the head. It's 2019 in a month, and I think the 4-guard, 1-in offense is the way to go.
The big problem for UNLV this year, and I will always, you know, advocate for them playing smaller and playing with more shooters. The problem, though, is even if they tried this year, they don't really
have
the shooters to do that. Because even when you play the extremely small lineup, and it's not even really that small, but the extremely small lineup that we saw tonight was when you had Robotham out there with Bryce Hamilton and Chris Clyburn, Tervell Beck, and Shakur Justin.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Justin, even though Justin made 3 threes in a game, Justin and Beck, they're not 3-point shooters.
Right.
I mean, they'll take some, but they're not really going to scare defenses. Hamilton has been on and off as a freshman. I don't know that if you're defensively, you're that worried about Hamilton lighting him up. And if he does, you say, all right, that guy's going to shoot. Shut him down. Clyburn's a career 29% shooter from 3 in his career. So it's like, even when UNLV tries to play small, they just don't have the shooters to really punish defenses. And to flip that to the defensive side. That's why I thought it was strange UNLV didn't help more defensively, because Valpo's in a similar situation. They don't have a ton of guys that just light it up from three. So I thought UNLV would be more active helping, but they, it's one of their keys this year is to not give up three, so they didn't want to leave open shooters.
No, that's a great point. I mean, we talk about putting more guard play out there, but do they have the guards that can knock down the shots that would require that? And the answer is no.
And again, we're coming off a game that I think is the floor for UNLV. Like, this is as bad as they will look. Bryce Hamilton has had a couple games this year where he looks excellent. Amori Hardy's had four games this year where he's been awesome. Chris Clyburn until tonight. Chris Clyburn's been great.
He's been great
this season. So, like, there are games when the three-point shooting doesn't necessarily have to be spectacular.
Yeah.
When you get Hardy or Clyburn or Hamilton able to score in transition or drive into the basket or whatever it is, you can still have a good offense and still have good guard play without a ton of shooting. But it's nights like tonight, and the turnovers hurt you, but it's nights like tonight where you need three-point shooting to stay in a game. Like, three-point shooting is the thing that cancels out everything you're bad at in college basketball. Like, UNLV is 3 of 17 from 3. If they instead shoot 25 threes and they make 10 of 25.
It's a different ballgame. Yeah.
They might win this game simply because of that. And that's 10 of 25 is not even a ridiculous number to shoot in a game. Like, those are relatively low totals.
Exactly. And if the turnovers stayed the same, like you said, they, 25 turnovers, if they had.
Still travel every time up the floor. Just make a three
just
every
make
now
a three.
And then. So I agree 100% with that. Like, it's something that if you look into the future with Marvin Menzies basketball, that to me is the biggest concern, is that he doesn't put a higher priority in that. Now, he's been doing this for 11 years, and in New Mexico State, he had a ton of success beating teams up inside. We saw last year's team was awful on defense, but last year's offense was really efficient. Like, they didn't shoot a lot of threes last year, but they were still able to score a bunch of points and do it in an efficient number. So you can still have – college basketball is not the NBA. There's enough of a talent discrepancy. Like, you can still have an efficient offense by playing through the post. I just think it makes it harder. Like, I just think it's the harder way to do things if you're UNLV basketball. So I agree with that as much
that's
as I possibly
point.
Can. If we look at the seniors in this game, Clyburn, Robotham, and Houston, they all three went into double figures in this game. But Marvin Menzies loves the seniors, all offseason talked about how they were going to have a huge role. Throw away the turnovers. Completely forget about the turnovers. Chris Clyburn shoots 4 of 11. Noah Robotham shoots 4 of 11. He was 1 for 6 from 3. He has not even had one good shooting game this year. Houston was 7 of 15. Those are the three. Like, as much as I love Hardy and Hamilton and what they can do offensively, UNLV's probably not going to have very many good games where those guys are all shooting under 50%. Like, those three guys, you've got to have at least one of them have a good game offensively, have a good scoring or shooting game, and they didn't get it, and I don't, Chris. What do you expect from Chris Clyburn going forward? Because I don't know what to do with Chris Clyburn, because he's been good through five games, but I feel like we've seen Chris Clyburn be good through five games and then kind of disappear for big stretches of a season.
Yeah, that was exactly what happened last year. I remember there were spurts where it was like, oh, okay, this is the Chris Clyburn that we keep hearing Marvin Menzies talk about, and then two games later he would completely disappear. And it's tough because he's definitely a streaky player. I mean, if he's on, he's on. But if he's off, I mean, he, like you said, just completely disappears. I think he's a huge role player. You know, get a couple. He's 10 points. You know, that's all you need from Chris Clyburn to be consistent. But he's not consistent enough to get you that, you know, not asking for blowaway numbers, but, you know, but just to be consistent. So that's kind of what I would expect out of Chris Clyburn. It's just, I haven't seen that.
Chris Clyburn didn't have a turnover tonight,
which is
strange, given that who else didn't? Jonathan Chamochacho, who played 3 minutes, is the only
JTT?
Other player who didn't have a turnover. Those are the two guys tonight. But I almost feel like in this game, it's probably a bad sign that Clyburn didn't have a turnover, because it almost feels like he wasn't involved. He took 11 shots, but it almost feels like he wasn't involved enough, or he wasn't doing enough or aggressive enough if he didn't have a turnover in a game where everybody had a turnover.
Yeah, that was probably the quietest double-digit scoring out of Clyburn that I've ever seen, because I didn't even realize he went into double digits until you said that. That was a quiet – what you said, what did you say, 12?
12 points, yep.
I would not have even came close to that.
He had a stretch in the second half where he got to the free throw line a few trips in a row and got 4 points out of that. But, yeah, 12 points. Houston at 14 and 19. That was a quiet 14-19 too.
Very quiet.
Like, I wouldn't have walked away thinking, "Wow, that's a dominant line,
yeah, right? That but is a huge line."
Didn't really feel like it, but no. You walk away and you're like, 19 rebounds is a really big number. Mm-hmm. For UNLV. So Rebel Extra out here at the Office Bar in Naked City Pizza. Again, taking your calls, 702-364-1100 here on ESPN Las Vegas. Kevin Martin and Tyler Bischoff will take a break and come back with more of your calls.
Now, back to Office Bar in Naked City Pizza for Rebel Extra. Brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers.
Welcome out to Naked City Pizza and the Office Bar. Come on by and see us. UNLV loses second game of the year to Valpo. Rick Smith's sons, Derek Smith, goes for 20 points. Jacord Houston led the way for UNLV with 14. We'll take a quick look around the Mountain West as it's the end. Well, not quite. We got a couple more in this series on Saturday, but almost the end of the Mountain West Missouri Valley Challenge. You had UNLV losing tonight to Valpo. Evansville went to Wyoming and won 86-78. Utah State held off Northern Iowa 71-52. Air Force got a win over Missouri State 88-69. It's been a tough start to the season for Air Force. Mm-hmm. Fresno State, this is not a part of the challenge, beat Pacific 81-78 in overtime.
Oh,
UNLV just torched Pacific the other day. And then Indiana State went to San Jose State and won 86-57, the last game of the night. In the Missouri Valley Mountain West Challenge. You have two more. New Mexico and San Diego State still haven't played in this challenge, and then it'll be it. The series will be dead and gone. The Mountain West moving on from the Missouri Valley. And everybody that's a part of the Mountain West, I think, is happy about that.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's going to miss the Missouri Valley Challenge.
No tears will be shed.
They're potentially trying to play the Atlantic 10
in
the future. Is that better?
I'm a big fan of the Atlantic 10. Fordham? Heck yeah.
I think it's a little bit better, but I think it's going to end up being giving you the same effect.
Yeah, no, it is.
I mean, it'll be slightly better teams, but you're still traveling across the country, and you're probably going to some smaller cities and hard to get to cities and playing teams. And we'll have the same complaints in 3 years about that we do right now about the Missouri Valley Challenge. But that is your look at the Mountain West tonight, as it hasn't been a great start to the year for Mountain West teams. Air Force is really struggling. Mm-hmm. San Diego State's had some. I don't know if it's a bad loss when you lose a couple games in Maui, but they've had some blowout losses to some really high-quality teams. But Utah State's look good so far this year. Got a win tonight as well. So we'll see where UNLV fits in. We had a question last Rebel Extra. And by the way, call in 702-364-1100, 702-364-1100. About last show we had about kind of where UNLV's place is in the Mountain West. And I still don't know that we really have enough games to make a good decision. But they were picked sixth. Do you think that's still fair right now? It's tough off of tonight, because tonight they look like they're going to finish 11.
Because if we were talking about, I mean, what did they win? Four straight before this?
Yeah.
They lost their home opener, won four straight. Yeah, if we were talking about, it's a loss, because this, like you said, this was a rock bottom loss.
Yeah, I mean, they play like this. They're not winning very many Mountain West games. You might beat San Jose State or Air Force with this, but. The rest of them, you're not winning anybody, beating anybody else.
Not at all. So I guess at this point, six might be still a fair assessment.
We have Ken on the phone. Ken on Rebel Extra. So it's a second loss for UNLV. How are you feeling about it? What you got for us, Ken?
Hey, I was just wanting to talk about the game that I went to. It's we're just offensively challenged. We don't have... any three-point shooters. We don't have any good passers. We don't have one single guy that can break down the defense. We don't even have an out-of-bounds play, it seems like, where we can, right?
They do. Marvin Menzies does like to run the same one over and over. He likes to save the out-of-bounds plays for conference play. So maybe in conference play we'll see a few more. Let me ask you this, Ken. If you had to pick one UNLV player on offense that you would want the ball in their hands, who would it be?
You know, this is probably a crazy one. Wow. I haven't seen much of Hamilton, but he looks pretty good. Amari, until he got hurt, like hit his face. That's a tough question. I can't think of... I don't think anyone can make their own.
No argument for anybody. Okay. I think you gave us two good ones potentially there in Hamilton and Hardy. We appreciate the call, Ken. But, I mean, after this game, that's a fair thing to say.
No, he made a great point. I think the only player that I've seen, and I think you mentioned this earlier, that can break down a defense solidly is Amari Hardy, but he is so streaky. I mean, there's some games where he looked so solid and then not exactly disappears like Chris Clyburn, but he's not as consistent as he needs to be.
Yeah, he wasn't good enough once he got into the paint. And that's with Amari Hardy, that's the problems you're going to have if he's going to be the guy that you rely on to get to create offense for other people to penetrate the lane. Is he can get there. He can get to the lane pretty much regardless. It's a matter of what happens after that. And you'll see games where he does a good job of finishing at the rim and he does a good job of finding his big men rolling to the basket or finding that next pass to the perimeter. But then you'll see games where he throws it right into a defender's arm or a couple times a night right into a defender's knee.
Right.
Valpo probably got like three steals of UNLV just throwing it off a guy's knee instead. And you'll see Amari Hardy struggle to finish at the rim. He's not a high-level finisher at the rim. He'll have games where he's good, but that's not really what he's best at. So I still think he's your best bet going forward as far as like, we need somebody to do something in the half court. Who do you give the ball to? But you'll have performances like this where you're like, oh, that guy, we can't be giving him the ball. But I still think overall he's the one you sort of look at. So Marvin Menzies did talk about turnover tonight. Thanks to Steve Cofield for grabbing this audio from the postgame press conference. Here is Marvin Menzies.
Well, when we guarded him in the half, when we got him in the half court, we were pretty good. It was just we couldn't get half court ball going because we turned the ball over 25 times. That's tough, man. All my years, that's the one statistic where you go, okay, next guy up, you know, and next guy up turned it over.
I think that next guy up thing is interesting because Mbaki Jiang picked up, it was his third foul early in the second half. He picks up his third foul early in the second half. And Menzies takes him out, brings in Shek to Dembele, and on the very first possession, Dembele gets called for a moving screen, and it's a turnover going the other way. So Menzies' frustration is every time he takes a guy out because he messed something up, the next guy comes in and just turns the ball right back over.
And that's exactly what we saw tonight. We would see him shuffle in new lineups. The guys that were being subbed in for would make the same mistakes that they were subbing the guys that got subbed out. The same silly passes, sloppy passes, traveling, illegal screens. It was just constant.
It's something that, I don't know, the constant substitution. Do you feel like they'd be better off if you just sort of let the starters or whatever rotation just play through it for 4 or 5 minutes and just see if they can figure it out that way?
That's a great point, and I actually had that thought during the game. It is so hard as a player to get any type of rhythm or any type of flow when you're constantly, and on top of that, not only getting flow, but you, in the back of your mind, you have that thought, if I turn this ball over, I'm getting checked out. Like, you know, as a player, it's, you know, maybe play, let them play through. I understand what Menzies was doing, trying to find some type of flow, but there was nothing going on.
An interesting part with this team is sort of the way Menzies substitutes. There's not really a group of guys that you can say that he definitely trusts those guys to play through it. Like last year, they had a big four, and they would sort of play through some stretches like
Jordy
this.
Jordy was one of those guys that he would leave out there no matter what.
And this year, you know, Justin played 37 minutes tonight. He's one of those guys. Robotham, we saw even two games ago. He didn't play the last 8 minutes of the game. So I don't know that Menzies even has, like, when things are going poorly, that he trusts a group of four or a group of five to play their way out of it, like maybe he did last season. So I think you'll still see him continue to do this. But it's hindsight after that because everybody kept making mistakes. But I do think in the future there might be a time where he needs to just, all right, I think this is my best five. They've been terrible for the last 2 minutes, but just stay out there and hopefully it gets better.
Because it won't. Because the substitutions that he was making were making the same mistakes. So what is the guys that are out there trying to get some rhythm going to do worse?
We've got another bite here from Marvin Menzies' post-game press conference.
that make those memory. Sometimes you can get in your own head, you know, and get in the way of yourself. I got to give them a little more confidence, I guess. I think real players have their own, but and these are real players, but they sometimes they need a little boost, you know. And I think they got to know that they could shoot the ball well. They get in, they work on their game, and you know, some nights are good, some nights are bad, but we got to establish the consistency, and that just comes with a lot of hard work. There's really no substitute.
Kevin, do you think the Marvin Minzies are talking a little bit about confidence and shooting the ball poorly. Do you think turning the ball over that much can affect your confidence when you shoot the ball?
No. As a player, no. Well, kind of. I mean, okay, so basically, I mean, the way they were turning the ball over, unforced turnover, sloppy passes, there was no the offense, did we ever see that half-court set really get into a rhythm? So I guess that would affect, you know, the ability to shoot, but if we're, you know, trying to equate turnovers to shooting and confidence, I don't think that that's...
And I don't know if that's what Menzies necessarily was talking about with the confidence. I mean, they missed a lot of shots in the second half, and that can hurt your confidence. But I was just curious if, you know, you turn the ball over that much, if you just start getting deflated, that it doesn't matter what
I
you
guess
do. But
everything kind of, you know, it's like a big snowball. I mean, if you're turning the ball over, then you start throwing up shots that aren't, you know, good shots or contested shots, and... You know, everything kind of snowballs from there.
Are you surprised? I'll go to one thing that I was happy to see early in this game, and then the turnover sort of ruined it. But Shakur Justin was the first guy they went to in this game, and he's been a player that it's kind of taken a back seat in terms of post touches to Mbaki Jong in this short season so far. But I was glad to see that because I think they can do more with him offensively. Like, I think he has one of the better offensive skill sets. I think they can do more with him rather than just ask him to go rebound and find some dirty points. Like, I think they can do more. And I was happy to see that the first couple of possessions. It's like, all right, let's go to Shakur Justin.
No, his skill set is, and we've seen what he can do. I mean, he has a short jumper. He can post up. I am really impressed with what he can do. And like you said, early on in the game, they were going to him a bunch, and then they kind of got away from that.
Well, they started throwing it out of bounds and getting called for moving screens. They couldn't go to anybody if they wanted to. But, yeah, I was happy to see that. And, again, you know, he ends up shooting 15 points and leads the team in scoring. And it's weird because it's like, what is Shakur Justin's role? Why aren't they running more plays for him? He's still leading the team in scoring. Exactly. It's just been the ways that he's gotten it. You know, he has the one game where he shoots three-pointers, and you're like, okay, is that what Shakur Justin is now? And then he's got games where he gets six offensive rebounds and turns that into, you know, 10 points or whatever it was 3 games ago. So it's just it's been a strange way that he's scored, and it's been, to me, it's been a little bit strange to see him Mbaki Jong getting more of those touches than Justin. Maybe that changes. Maybe they're just trying early on. Let's see what we have in Mbaki Jong. And so far, Jong's been good on offense.
Yeah, I've been impressed with him. And like you said, maybe they're just trying to feel it out before they get into Mountain West play, and they'll stick to something that worked.
So UNLV falls 72-64 to Valpo. They're now 4-2 on the season. Cincinnati is coming up on Saturday. Mick Cronin returns to the Thomas and Mack. This has been Rebel Extra for Kevin E. Martin. I'm Tyler Bischoff.